It appears the city of Fargo will be looking for a new police chief. A press conference is scheduled for today. It appears that one of the Iranian women soccer players seeking asylum in Australia has changed her mind and put the others in danger. And it appears that inflation is not getting worse, at least for now. Good morning, everybody. Great to be with you here on the Steve Ahlstrom Show on a beautiful sunny morning in Fargo. Don't have a whole lot of wind, and it's going to be in the 30s today. We will take it for mid-March. March 11th today, almost halfway through March, almost getting to the time when you can say, I think it might be spring. I heard Dean saying today that all across North Dakota and western Minnesota, the temps are going to get really nice, but it might take a few days, and there might be some snow here later this week. Some parts of the area getting 3 to 6, and the metro here where I'm coming to you from this morning, maybe just an inch or so, and that will melt pretty quick. That I don't know what we got here in Fargo, that half inch or whatever it was overnight last night, not last night, but the night before, pretty much disappeared, and you can't really find much of it anymore. The ground is getting warm enough now to start melting from the bottom up. So we like that. We like bottom-up snow melting this time of year. All right, I want to get to a whole lot of stuff here today on the program for you. I've been working this morning and last night trying to find all the good stuff I think that you might want to know about. And then all of a sudden, I wake up this morning, our newsroom is sending a bulletin out that we're going to have a change of police chief. And right now, all we really know is that Dave Zabolski is apparently, reportedly, it's sources right now, nobody on the record saying it's official, but sources telling our newsroom that the Fargo police chief, who came here a few years ago, is stepping down. I did have a chance to text with the mayor this morning, and I said, Tim, can you confirm this? And he said, not say anything right now, but there's a press conference at 12:15 at City Hall. So there you go. So going to happen, and just a matter of finding out what he's going to do. He is, I don't know how old Dave Zabolski is. Feels like he's maybe about my age. I'm 58 or so. There's no doubt about that. He seems like he's about my age or so. And in law enforcement, those guys retire early. And I guess I understand that with as much stress and as much as they go through mentally, as much as anything else, they retire early and probably with good reason. So he's a young enough guy. He can do some consulting, do some private security stuff, or maybe still stay in the business. Who knows? I guess we'll find out more later today. So that's kind of the big story, but I really have told you all that we know. So it's one of those things that's like the big breaking story today, but there's not a whole lot to tell you. So there you go. That's kind of the big buzz around our newsroom and around town here today. 701-271-1100 is the phone line. That's the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line. They've recently expanded and can get you in fast. They now offer counseling, occupational therapy, physical therapy, and a nurse practitioner. They do it all, mental health, physical health, the whole thing there. Make an appointment. Get in soon, valleychristian.co, valleychristian.co. I'm coming to you live from the Drive with Vision studio, drivewithvision.com. That's Vision Ford Lincoln in Wahpeton, where 15 minutes or less will get you a nifty car, truck, or SUV. All right, let's get to it here. We'll start with the Morning Wire. These are the rapid-fire rundown items that you want to know about today. Semi-automatic storylines, I like to call it, because we try to rip through them as fast as we can here. A lot of information in a short amount of time. We start with the almanac. I will tell you that I was looking at almanac information today, and record high for today in Fargo, 70. It was 70, and that was just a couple years ago, back in 2024. Record low, minus 28 in 1948. So you can have quite a variance. And sounds like over the next week or so, we're going to be below zero, and then we're going to be maybe in the 50s. So looks like we're going to get just about everything there. So, we will have a 3 minute and 21 second addition to our daylight hours today in the Central Time Zone. That's pretty nice. Sunset tonight in Fargo is going to be 7:27. Yes, I will take all of that. Okay, in the markets today, a mixed picture. Dow is down 186, S&P 500 up 7, NASDAQ is up 99. WTI crude oil today down about $4 a barrel. So after that massive swing we saw, where it was almost 120 on the WTI price Sunday night, Monday morning. President comes on and says, yeah, you know, I think we're getting there. I think we're almost done with this darn war. And here we are. We've gone down a darn near $40 a barrel. We're at 83.70 right now and dropping. Gold today down $50 an ounce at 5,191 an ounce. Silver down 384 at 85.75. And Bitcoin about unchanged from yesterday, 70,000 bucks or so. AAA says average price of a gallon of regular unleaded gas up another 9 cents nationwide, 357. In North Dakota, average price is only up about 2 cents at 308. South Dakota, 313. Minnesota, 325. In the news today, as we mentioned, the story everybody's talking about, Fargo Police Chief Dave Zabolski apparently will resign. In a press conference at City Hall today, Mayor Mahoney tells me it's 12:15 is when the press conference will take place. As Zabolski took over in 2020 during a period of, I don't know what you'd call that, after George Floyd, civil unrest across the country. He's come in under fire in recent years for not being available during key incidents that have happened in the city. We'll find out more as the day goes on. U.S. Interior Secretary Doug Burgum says the International Energy Agency should release oil reserves to address the disruption caused by the Iran war. So calling for the tap of European oil reserves. Burgum's comments come as the IEA has proposed to release as much as 400 million barrels. That would be the biggest such action in its history. I saw a really good debate yesterday on Fox Business between a couple of people that know the business pretty well. And one guy said, once all this stuff settles down and the war ends and we are able to do whatever we can do with the oil there, he says he thinks we're going to have oil prices in the 40s because we're going to have all the Venezuela supply, U.S. supply ramping up. The drillers are very active right now, obviously trying to meet some demand here at home. And if we can tap into any of the Iranian oil supply and access any of that, we could have a supply flooding the market. So we'll have to see. Mike Lindell is calling out fellow GOP governor candidate Lisa Daymuth. This actually happened on Scott Hennin's show here. Lindell says that Lisa Daymuth is part of the problem. And a lot of these things with the fraud happened under her watch as legislative leader. And so you're getting a little bit of kind of internal fighting, which I guess is typical during the primary season. In East Grand Forks today, reports the forum, they are having a debate in the city council about whether they should fly the old Minnesota state flag or the new one adopted in 2024. Council member Tim Riopelle requested the discussion after being flooded with calls from residents who feel the new flag does not represent the area's history. The Fargo Dome Authority reports the forum is facing a major roadblock in its $140 million Phase 2 proposal for a new convention center. The Fargo Dome originally pledged millions from the Fargo Dome's permanent fund to help pay for the project, but NDSU is objecting, arguing those funds must be reserved for Fargo Dome renovations. The dome stands on some NDSU land, and so they've got a little bit of say in this one here. Developers in Moorhead are warning that the city's in short supply of shovel-ready residential lots, and that could choke off growth during the spring building season. The forum reports that city officials confirm that while the inventory is currently low, there is relief on the way because several new subdivisions are apparently in the pipeline and hundreds of new lots could be ready to go by early summer. Very interesting there. With the mortgage rates going on where there are these days, every delay in getting these lots to market feels like it might make things more expensive for the buyer in the long term. So see how that happens there. City of Fargo has officially reached the halfway mark in its funding goal for the Downtown Engagement Center relocation. They need $1.4 million, and Forum reports that they now have $700,000 of that. The city is still looking for some private donors and state grants to get them all the way up to the deal there. And one of the seven members of the Iranian soccer team granted refuge in Australia has changed her mind, forcing Australian officials to quickly move the other six women after she divulged their secret location to the Iranian embassy. Sounds like we've got a mole there. The players have been under guard by Australian Federal Police in Brisbane to prevent any attempt by regime loyalists to do who knows what. And fears have been growing for the fate of those women after they failed to sing the national anthem before their opening match of the Asian Cup last week, which is being held in Australia. So those are some of the stories making headlines here today. Story of the day, what's going on in Pennsylvania? Favorite Journey song right here, Addison.
I mean, it's a good one.
This is the one.
It's one of their best, I think.
Oh, it just the harmony in this song, and it's a story. I mean, it's everything you want in a great song. And, man, go see Journey when you can see them. Don't know much how much longer they'll be touring. And these guys, I don't know. For me, top five all-time band, I think, when you're talking about that genre, the kind of the classic rock band. These guys are awesome. And I've heard people who've seen them the last couple of years. Steve Perry apparently is still singing and doing it well. So, yeah, we're not going to have these bands very, very much longer. So you want to go see the Doobies. You want to go see Boston. You want to go see the Eagles. I think they guess you just got to say we're going to go do it. Maybe this summer somewhere. All right. I want to let you know that if you are trying to figure out how to talk to your kids about this crazy world around us, not sure how to answer those tough questions about culture, identity, and values, well, we're bringing Stacey Manning to Fargo, Saturday, March 28th at Capstone Classical Academy. She's written a book called Raising a Conservative Kid in a Woke City, and she'll equip parents with practical tools and confidence to have thoughtful, age-appropriate conversations with their kids. And grandparents, hey, you play a big role in this now. Those grandkids, they listen to you. And it's not like mom and dad who are like bossing around all the time anyway and rolling their eyes. They listen to grandma and grandpa. So go check this one out. VIP meet and greet at 6 o'clock, program at 7. Tickets start at just $25. Go to am1100theflag.com and click on the button there, and you'll be able to buy tickets. Okay, so story of the day, which is what I do every day at 9:20. Probably should be the Dave Zabolski story. But I've kind of told you there's not much known. We understand he's going to resign. There's a press conference at 12:15. Don't know much more than that today. It'll probably be story of the day tomorrow. So today, here's what I believe the story of the day is. And this is not one that most people would pick. But as you know, I enjoy stories about saving money as a government and watching our spending. And Cynical Publius, who is one of the social media accounts that a lot of us follow, I know I've heard this from many of you too, that love the account and just seems to have a finger on the pulse of what conservatives really care about, put this note up yesterday. In just 6 months of the new SNAP work requirements, already 59,578 people have lost their benefits in Pennsylvania. This means almost 60,000 people decided they would rather no longer get food stamps than volunteer or get a part-time job. 59,578 people in one state in just 6 months. So I decided to do a little fact-checking and find out what the full story is here. And it is true that nearly 60,000 Pennsylvanians have lost their food stamp benefits since the new federal work requirements went into effect on September 1. You remember, this was part of one big, beautiful bill. That if you're going to be getting free food from the government, which is basically from you and me, you're going to have to either volunteer or work somewhere for 20 hours a week or so. So what's happening behind all of this here? So this is from Pennsylvania's Department of Human Services, and that number is exactly right, 59,578 lost their eligibility between September 2025 and February 2026. Adults aged 18 to 64 who don't have kids under 14 must prove they're working, volunteering, or in training for 20 hours a week. That was the rule change. And at the time, I remembered saying, well, this makes sense. Why would we not want to do this? And this will probably get a few people who have just sat around doing nothing that are able to get them off their rear ends and get them into the workforce. So all of this looks to be a very good development. Now, of course, you're having some nonprofit groups, I put in air quotes, arguing that this is a bad thing and that people are losing their benefits who should be getting them because of paperwork hurdles. and they're not able to navigate the new, more complicated reporting systems in time. Okay, so you're getting a debate here. So Republican proponents, like Cambria County Republican Chair Jackie Kohlbach was quoted in a local news report out there saying that we have so many job opportunities out here, it is more than reasonable to expect able-bodied adults to work 20 hours a week to build a little self-discipline, right? Doesn't it make sense to you? Makes sense to me. Now, the Governor Shapiro out there is a good Democrat, and of course he's going to complain about anything like this. And he said these rules punish people in rural areas or older adults who face age discrimination or lack of transportation to get to 20 hours a week. Okay. I can argue that, but for the sake of the conversation, we'll just move along here. And the people at health services say, remember, this is a point in time number. These people are not necessarily gone forever. If they submit their paperwork or prove they're meeting the 20-hour requirement, they can have their benefits reinstated. But that's the whole point, because I don't think that there are all these people that really are out there that are trying to. I think there's duplicates. I think there's people that don't want to work that can. So I'll be interested to see as time goes on what happens here. And so I decided to have a little debate with AI. And I decided to play devil's advocate to the claims about, well, you know, this is really tough for people. So I asked Gemini to pick a side here, okay? And I said, isn't it reasonable to think somebody who needs food is going to try to fill out the paperwork so that they don't starve? Because you're hearing people on the left say, these people are going to starve because it's too hard for them to fill out paperwork. I'm like, okay, if I'm going to starve, I'm going to figure out how to fill out paperwork. There are local organizations and nonprofits that will help me do that. So Gemini says, fair question, Steve. On the surface, seems like a no-brainer. If you're hungry, you fill out the form, right? But if I'm going to take the other side, the common sense reality is that life for people on the margins is not always that simple. According to recent 2026 data from the Urban Institute, there are three main reasons why someone who's truly in need might still fail to keep their benefits. One is the notice gap. For many of the 60,000 people in Pennsylvania, the process ended before it even began. The mail problem. Low-income individuals are statistically more likely to move frequently or experience homelessness. A 2025 study found that 32% of people who lost benefits never got the official notice from the state. If the letter goes to an old address or a shelter where you no longer stay, you don't even know you're being audited until your EBT card shows a zero balance. To that, I debated back with AI, and I said, okay, but if you realize that you don't have food, you're not going to sit around and say, where did that notice go in the mail? You're going to go down to the local whatever office or the local homeless shelter and say, I can't get food, and they're going to help you, right? So that was my counter-argument. Another debate on this was the learning curve, that you've got older people who may not be able to figure it out. And then the 20-hour reporting trap is that many people work in retail or manual labor where hours fluctuate. And if your boss cuts your shift, you only get 18 hours in 1 week, you're technically in violation. And I reported back to Gemini. I said, I still think if you're starving, you're going to find a way. And there are so many social service organizations out there to help you that I really don't feel like it's an honest debate there. So after 6 months, if you haven't figured it out, I just am not sure that you are trying. Again, if you're going to get free food on the taxpayer dime, you have to do your part. And there's plenty of people out there who will help you. All right. When we come back here on the Steve Hallstrom Show, I want to talk a little bit about why mortgage rates are rising. Oh, some REO too. Addison's spinning the hits here today. Okay, let's get the important things out of the way here first. Steve Perry is not with Journey anymore. How did I not know this? I knew he kind of jumped out for a while back in the late 80s. The band, they were on a break for quite a while. But then I'm doing a little search here, and it's been a guy named Arnel Pineda, who sounded like a young Steve Perry, who's been with the band since, 2007? Addison, is that what I'm seeing here?
Yeah, that's the year I read.
So Perry's been out of the band for 28 years. I talked to somebody who saw Journey when they were at, was it Was it when they came? Did they come to the Twin Stadium a couple summers ago? And somebody who went down there told me, oh, Steve Perry still sounds as good. So, but they were right. It wasn't him. It hasn't been for a while. Thank you, whoever called and gave us a heads up on that. So, very good stuff. Okay, 33 past the hour here on the Steve Hallstrom Show. So, I heard on the Fox Business Channel earlier today, I was listening, got in the office a little early, had Maria on. And Maria was not all that interested in talking about the consumer price index, the inflation number this morning. She went to break after like 5 minutes. So sometimes they go for like a half hour and they got a panel and just kind of a ho-hum report. So there wasn't a whole lot to see there. That's all fine. But one of her co-hosts said that 10-year treasury notes since the war in Iran started are up 20 basis points. So that's almost a quarter of a percent. And because of that, this is causing some concern with what could happen with mortgages. So I'm like, okay, I enjoy getting into this stuff, and I feel like one of the things I get to do here that I enjoy doing is kind of breaking down these things that seem kind of like really in the weeds to something that matters to all of us. And I think this matters to all of us. So let me try to give you the best explanation I can after doing a little research on that. So I checked it out. It's true. The 10-year treasury yield is about 4.18% this morning. The day before the U.S. and Israeli strikes in Iran, the 10-year was at 3.96. So that's right. It's up about a quarter of a percent. So what does this mean? Well, it doesn't sound like much when you say, you know, 0.2% or 20 basis points or whatever. But in the bond world, it's a pretty aggressive move. Now, in war times, usually, people will run to government bonds for safety. And when you have more people buying, it's a supply-demand thing with bonds. When you have more people buying, the rate goes down because there are so many out there. And so you kind of get into a bidding war. But this is an oil war, according to some Bloomberg stuff that I was looking at this morning. Investors are not necessarily seeing safety here. And, oh, let's run to bonds because it's a war like we typically know war to be. They're saying this is an oil war. So they're seeing oil prices at $100 or more right away. Now, it's dropped from there, but the bond prices haven't really moved back down. They're still up there. If you have higher oil, that means obviously higher gas prices, shipping costs, and inflation taking a jump there as well. Inflation is poison for bonds. If a bond pays you 4%, but inflation hits 5%, you're losing money, right? So because of that, investors are dumping U.S. debt, and that forces yields to spike to attract new buyers. You want more people in, the rates go up. And all of this has kind of handcuffed the Fed. So all those interest rate cuts that we've been thinking we might get, well, the promise of all that seems to be dying by the day because the Fed can't cut rates into an oil-driven inflation fire. You just don't do that because when you have inflation already, you cut rates, and typically that will spike inflation. Now, I would argue that as I have watched this closer over the last probably 3-4 years, I have not seen what typically economists will tell you happens. And I don't know if it's this new economy we're in with the AI, automation, robotics, and whatever. I don't know that I can explain it. But when we have cut rates in the past, we haven't seen that runaway inflation. When we saw the last bout of, you know, hyperbolic inflation, that was when the Biden administration came in and pumped trillions of dollars into the economy with all these green energy spending programs and who knows what went where. And all the social service monies that now went right to Minnesota and then out the door to Somalia or Al-Shabaab or whatever. That is when you flood the economy with money, you're going to definitely see prices go up. And we saw just a textbook example of that. If you flood the market with money, you're going to get big inflation. We did 9% in 2022. But when they have moved interest rates recently in cutting, we have not seen that kind of runaway inflation. The Fed has worried about this for so long, and they are deathly afraid, they have been, of cutting rates because they say it's going to guarantee inflation. I'm just telling you, my friend, I don't buy it. I don't buy, and I don't know why, but I've not seen it when it's happened over the last 5 years or so. Anyway, so this all hits the housing market with the yields going up on these bonds. On February 27th, the 30-year fixed rate mortgage finally dipped below that magical 6% barrier, and today, 0.2% higher, just like the yields. It's about 6.25% if you go for a 30-year mortgage right now. So all of this hit the housing market like a freight train. If you're a family with a $300,000 mortgage, that 12-day spike just added about $500 a year to your payment, about $50 a month. Not quite that, 47, 48. So that's like a war tax almost. And you're not going to hear many people in the administration talk about it because it doesn't sound good, just like it doesn't sound good to say, well, oil prices are up and the president says, hang on, we're almost done here. It's not going to be this way for very long. So you kind of got this back and forth within the administration right now where Trump says we're almost done and Pete Hegseth says we're ramping up. So you tell me, I don't know. But our economy is really sensitive to these things. When you talk about 20 basis points, whether it's yields, whether it's mortgages or whatever, because I read one explanation of this, like running a marathon with a 100-pound backpack on your shoulders. We have a $38.8 trillion national debt, and that's why our economy is so sensitive to these kind of quarter-point moves. The Congressional Budget Office projects the U.S. is going to pay about $1 trillion in interest on the debt this year. I'm going to say this again because I hope that our congressional members are listening. The CBO projects the U.S. will pay over $1 trillion in interest alone this year. So every 1% in the interest rate adds about $300 billion to the deficit. That's bad news. That's no bueno. Right there. And I think as Americans, too many of us have just said, well, whatever, it doesn't seem like a problem, so we don't care, we don't talk about it, we don't think about it, we don't ask about it. But you guys, if we can't run a solvent country, which obviously we can't, we're not broke, we're worse than broke, then what, we're not going to have like all this Social Security, Medicare, whatever, that all the stuff that we all are hoping that we will have available to us someday. Tell me how can two things be true at the same time? How can we have this level of debt and expect that it's not going to completely bankrupt our Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid system? I don't know that those two things can exist at the same time. This is not going to end well. I just don't know how or when. But I'm sure that it's not going to end well because we as politicians do not have the appetite to do it. Maybe on the Republican side, but I don't even know if it's true there. So this 20 basis point hike to pay that interest in those in that debt, Treasury has to flood the market with new bonds, and that crowds out money that's usually available for mortgages. And if the government is going to suck up all that cash in the room to pay its old bills, the bank's got to raise your mortgage rate just to compete for that same dollar. So this is where people go, I don't know, I don't really see all this debt's really bothering me right now. Well, yes, you do if you have to refinance or buy a home or take out a mortgage of any kind there. It's kind of like a car breaking down, I read one analogy. If you have a $500 credit card balance and a family emergency hits, you can handle it. But if you got a $50,000 credit card balance and the car breaks down, you're in deep trouble. We're that guy with the or that gal with a $50,000 balance on our credit card. And the war in Iran is that car breaking down. It's a little dramatic. I get it. And I don't think President Trump would love it for me to say it that way. But right now, you guys, any little addition to the pile, it's like, you know, those games where you like pile a bunch of something on top of something else and see how long it can handle it structurally till it falls. Like it's a house of cards, you know, you put the card and if you get too much weight there and you're just a hair off and how those foundational cards are sitting, it doesn't work. So the war in Iran is not just happening, quote unquote, over there. It's happening right here in our local bank mortgage lender's office and the realtor's office and the title company, all that. We had that one beautiful week, one big beautiful week in February when we were back in the fives. But the moment that that first Tomahawk flew toward Tehran, the sale ended. And as long as oil is where it is, now it's come back down, that helps. But the Treasury yields have not yet gone down. And as long as that continues to climb, all those American dreams about houses and mortgages and all that are just that. They're pipe dreams. And we got to get this thing back under control. Now, the president says this is all going to end fairly soon. And I hope that he's right. And all this can maybe return there. But there's no doubt what's happening right now. And all we're guaranteed in anything is what is happening right now. So let's hope that the president's right. And the good news is that the president, he sees all this and he doesn't want this hanging over the administration's head and with midterms coming up. So we'll see. I hope that military can finish that job very soon and get that done and get everything back to normal. When we return here on the Steve Alstrom Show, Starbucks, one of the most iconic brands in this country, but it's taken a hit. 701-271-1100. That's the phone number. Do you think that people in our country really care about the national debt? I'm not talking about the congressional Democrats. We know they don't. If the whole country went bankrupt and Donald Trump was in office, I think they would be happy about that because it would look bad for Donald Trump. We've already established a fact that they wanted the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act to expire at the end of last year, which would mean a big tax increase for everybody in the country. So they clearly don't care if things are bad for you and me as long as it makes Donald Trump look bad. And maybe it's, look, I mean, we all take a look at the quote-unquote political battles and say, well, you know, if there's got to be a little short-term pain for a little long-term gain, that's fine. And if Steve and Addison and you and everybody has to pay more taxes for a little while and it's a crunch and people can't put food on their table, well, I guess that's the price we have to pay because it'll make Donald Trump look bad. This is how they're wired. I can't explain it any other way. So we know that they're sort of past beyond hope. I'm asking about the people you go bowling with or the other teachers you work with or the guys you go hunting with. Do you think they see the debt as a problem? My guess is no, because for the most part, nobody's telling them, hey, you know, mortgage rates, they'd probably be a percent lower if we didn't have this debt, or 2%, I don't know what the right number is. I don't know. Maybe it's that. Maybe people just don't care. But gosh, you know, you take a look at what we're talking about, $1 trillion in interest that we're going to pay on this debt this year, in 1 year. So over the next 5 years, we're going to pay $5 trillion in debt. What could we do with that money if we had it? Well, we could obviously whittle down the debt that we have, which would be the first thing to have. But once you have money in your government bank account, what can you do with it then? Well, it's not your money, it's the people's money. So you could cut income taxes, right? You could do one of those, hey, everybody gets a check for $1,000 or $2,000 or whatever it is if you're a taxpayer. Because you've been paying the money in, and now the money should go back to you. So we could have rebates, lower taxes. We could have tax credits for the right kinds of things. Yeah, that gets dicey, I know. But do you think people really get it? Do you think they understand? Do you think they care? Curious what you think about that. It's a little bit of a wonky subject. I get it. It's not as simple as saying, you know, go Trump, go, or Biden sucks, or I like the war, or whatever, or I don't like the war. I'm curious. This is a smart audience. Curious what you think about that. Does anybody really care? All right. So I want to talk about Starbucks for a minute. Starbucks. I don't know why, but it feels to me like Starbucks is one of those like iconic liberal brands. You know, you go to the coffee shop and it seems a little, kind of the yuppie crowd or whatever they call yuppies these days. And I know over the past years, there have been some stances that Starbucks has taken corporately about different social issues that lean left. And you hear about the, Starbucks won't serve ice or whatever because they are, killing all the black and the brown people. Well, Starbucks founder Howard Schultz has announced that his family is leaving Seattle. This announcement came out the same day the Democrats passed an income tax on Washington State. Schultz is going to Florida, and Starbucks corporate is moving to Nashville. The wealth exodus is underway. And he doesn't say that in his announcement. He says, Starbucks stands today on the shoulders of many Pacific Northwesterners who helped build the company. They helped shape the culture, the benefits, and the brand, contributing to the community and public life of the city and state. It is our hope that Washington will remain a place for business and entrepreneurship to thrive, creating essential opportunity for those in Seattle and the surrounding areas. On the same day, the Democrats pass an income tax in Washington State. So we hope things go good for you guys, but we got the money to move out. We're going to Florida, and our company is going to Tennessee. And good luck to the rest of you. So isn't that interesting? And what does that tell you? I think that says an awful lot. All right, coming up in hour number two, John Trandum will be here. John is a former district chair in the Republican Party, and I want to talk to him about this conversation of what we are expecting coming up, and really more than expecting what's coming up in the upcoming state GOP convention. But does the convention mean anything anymore? And does all of the party work really mean anything before? Everybody that is the incumbent, statewide incumbents, they're all skipping the convention. And I don't want to put words in anybody's mouth, but it feels to me like collectively they're saying, the crazies are going to be there, and I don't want to be involved with the crazies. And so I just wonder, why have a convention then if all the candidates you're going to nominate are not any of the incumbents? Maybe some of them can win, but they're probably going to be underdogs. And does it really matter anymore? Does the convention really matter anymore? We're going to talk to John about that coming up here in the 10 o'clock hour. More on the Steve Hallstrom Show after this. Hour number two of the Steve Hallstrom Show, brought to you in part by PetroServe USA, where you can get a great meal at a great price. And you know, when you're on the go, and I'm that kind of guy, I'm traveling all over the place, it's nice to be able to stop somewhere and not look at a menu and it's like, okay, I can get the number three meal with fries or tater tots or whatever, big greasy burger. It's nice to be able to walk in someplace when you're driving around for work, or maybe you're out of town, and know that you can get a good home-cooked meal. So when I am driving around, whether it's here in town or if I'm headed out west a little bit or over in Minnesota, and I stop by, say, Yulin over there, or I'm in Wahpeton, someplace like that, and you see the PetroServe USA sign, it's like, oh, yes, the oasis in the desert of good home-cooked food. So here are your specials today. In Valley City, you get the meatloaf, Harwood Swedish meatballs, West Maine pulled pork over mac and cheese. Ooh, that sounds good. 12th Avenue, tater tot hot dish. 205 NP Avenue, Rangoon Seafood. I have no idea what Rangoon. Addison, what is Rangoon Seafood, do you suppose? Is that a,
you know, I've got
like a stir fry shrimp kind of thing, or?
That's what my guess would be, but I'm not sure. It's not something I've had.
I know it's good if they're serving over at PetroServe USA, home cooked food over there. Mac and beef in Yulin. Ada, Chef's Choice today. 45th Street, General Tso Chicken. Castleton, French Dip Sandwich. Now we're talking, a French Dip Sandwich. When are you going to get a French dip sandwich at a gas station ever? Well, you're going to get it today at PetraServe USA, helping America fuel better. Okay, let's get to the key three. These are what I believe to be the three most consequential stories in the news cycle today. Stories that rise above the rubble of your normal daily news cycle. Story number one. Fargo Mayor Tim Mahoney confirms to yours truly that there will be a 12:15 press conference at City Hall, at which it is expected that Dave Zabolski, the chief of police, will submit his resignation or will inform the media that he has submitted his resignation. Sources told our newsroom, we broke the story late last night that the chief is going to be stepping down. Mahoney will not confirm anything to me, said Steve. I'd rather not come on the show. But, hey, we'll talk at noon down at City Hall there today. I can tell you that the city commissioners, at least two of them that I talked to, said they had not gotten any heads up on this and that they had been told by other city employees. So it didn't come directly from them. Now, this isn't all city commissioners, but the two that I talked to this morning about it. Zabolski took over in Fargo in 2020 during a period of significant civil unrest across our nation. And he has come in under fire in recent years for not being available during key incidents that have happened in the city. Let me say this about Dave Zabolski. I have thought that he was gone too much during some of the big incidents in the city. But I am not one of the people that says we needed to get this guy out of here. I didn't feel like he did a bad job running the city police from everything that I could tell. Everybody that I would talk to on and off the record who had something to say about it said, yeah, you know what? The guy's not perfect, but he's fine. Some people really liked him. I don't know that I talked to anybody that said, oh, yeah, that guy's a piece of work. I never heard that about Dave Zabolski. Now, I questioned a lot of the data that we were hearing from City Hall about how crime is going down in Fargo, just because it's felt to me from doing this job every morning that crime is not getting better, crime is getting worse. But the chief had statistics, and I'm not going to say the guy is a liar, but there's a part of my BS meter that always went off a little bit like, are we sure? But again, in light of any information to the contrary, I can't say that those books were cooked. So, Steve, sit down, shut up, put a sock in it because you don't know anything. I'm just telling my gut feels that there's more crap going on in the city than we used to have 5-10 years ago. Now, do I think that's Dave Zabolski's problem? I don't. I've heard people say that he has been a little wishy-washy on having certain people, enough cops downtown at bar close and things like that. Tell me that you couldn't find issues with anybody who does a job that might do it a little bit differently. Unless there's something I'm not remembering, I can't say that I think that Zabolski has committed any grave errors here. Now, the whole thing about being out there and getting information out, yes, that could have been done better. But those are not reasons that you fire somebody, and he wasn't fired, even though there's been some emotions and frustration and so forth. So will Dave Zabolski go down as the greatest police chief in history? I don't know. Will he go down as the worst? No, that's not, in my mind, absolutely not. I think that Dave Zabolski, when he came here, he came at a time when the city commission, I will say there, my biggest concern is the city commission at that time. They wanted somebody that would kowtow to a small group of people in our community that were very loud at the time, who wanted to tell you the police were the problem, the police hated people of color, and that every cop was the guy in Minneapolis who was in the George Floyd thing. And I think the city commission brought in a candidate that they thought was going to appeal to this small group. And I think that was a bad choice. But I think they fell to what a lot of city commissions and governments fell to at that time, this complete overreaction to what happened with George Floyd. and they wanted somebody who they could take to that group and say, here, we hired someone that you would approve of. And we had this police oversight committee for some crazy reason, because we already have a city commission that does that. But I put the fault there more than I do on Zabolski or anybody else. It came out that Dave Zabolski took a knee with the protesters in Beloit, Wisconsin before he came over, and that may be very well why he got the job. I don't know. But I think there was a chip on this community's shoulder collectively, maybe not everybody, but certainly a large number who were never going to give him the benefit of the doubt because of that. And I don't think that's right either. So how will Dave Zabolski be remembered by me? I don't know. It's complicated for me because I can't say that I feel like the guy did a bad job. There were things he didn't do great. I don't love the taking the knee thing either. But when he came here and started day one, I said, okay, it's weird. I don't get it. But let's measure the guy on the merits of the job that he has done. And I don't think he has failed this city in any way. And so for that reason, I will say Dave Zabolski was a fine police chief. Was he the best ever? I don't know, but he certainly wasn't the worst ever. So a little commentary along with the first story today in the Key 3. Story number two, this one comes from Fox 9 TV in the Twin Cities. And I just had to laugh when I saw this. Fox9.com headline, Paid Family Leave Act Strains Minnesota Businesses, Chamber says. So the executive brief on this story is Minnesota businesses are reporting challenges with the new Paid Family Medical Leave Act. Boy, no kidding. The Minnesota Chamber of Commerce presented survey findings to a House committee. Concerns include administration difficulties, potential misuse, and financial sustainability. Boy, no kidding. So here's the full story. Minnesota businesses are facing significant hurdles with the new Paid Family Medical Leave Act. Just 2 months after its implementation. The Minnesota Chamber of Commerce shared that 80% of its 6,300 members already offered some form of paid leave before the state mandate. But business owners are now experiencing increased costs and frustration due to the new requirements. The chamber highlighted several concerns, including the program's complexity, slow execution, and disruption for small or seasonal businesses. There are also worries about potential misuse and long-term financial sustainability. Beyond just anti-fraud sentiments, the chamber says employees are reporting concerning trends, like providers being pressured by patients for the full 12 weeks of leave, even if their condition doesn't require it. A number of respondents have shared that their employees are making more on paid leave than the wage replacement thresholds in law. Employees are going on vacation or to music festivals while supposedly on leave, and those anecdotes don't reveal fraud or a lack of oversight by the department. They highlight concerns with the broad eligibility and limited employer recourse elements of the law. To employers, overuse is abuse, 100%. And finally, the last one, CPI inflation, 2.4%, core 2.5, and unchanged at the lowest levels in 5 years. And that's definitely worth noting. Inflation seems to be, I will say, under control, if not completely evaporated. I wouldn't mind a little deflation for a little bit, but maybe that'll happen sooner or later in time. When we come back, best thing I heard all day, Charles Payne is smart and wise, and there is a difference. That's next. All right, City of Fargo has put out an official statement now confirming that Zabolski is retiring. It's not a resignation. It's a retirement. He is done being a cop, and good for him. I think those guys probably need to retire a little earlier than most of us, because we all have stresses in our job, but I can't imagine doing what they do. The statement from Fargo, City of Fargo, says Fargo Police Chief Dave Zabolski is announcing his retirement from the Fargo Police Department following a law enforcement career that has spanned for more than four decades. That's interesting wording from me. Usually when someone retires, you say they're retiring from the profession, not from the police department, but maybe I'm reading too much into that. I don't know. But whenever I see that, I say, I wonder if that means anything. Probably not. The mayor has made a comment on this. It just basically gives some statements here from Zabolski that he thanks the Fargo community, looking forward to spending more time with my wife and kids and grandkids. Love the team I work with in Fargo. Kind of gives a background on when he came and some of his accomplishments there. The Mayor's comment, the mayor is quoted once in here saying Chief Cebulski has served our community with professionalism and strong commitment to public safety, and we are grateful for his leadership and years of service. We will approach the process of selecting the next police chief with thoughtful consideration and will involve city leaders, law enforcement, and community stakeholders. No, leave the community stakeholders out of it, please, to determine the best path forward. We had it almost right. City leaders and law enforcement. That's all we need to determine the best path forward. But sorry for the editorial comment there. And then there's a confirmation of what I told you earlier, that press conference at 12:15 today to discuss the immediate plan for the leadership of the police department and what comes next. It is on their live stream as well, so you can check that out. TVFargo.com. My guess is that Scotty will have that on the What's On Your Mind show today. So official confirmation coming in here just a few minutes ago that the rumors are true that there will be a new chief. Emailer Dan says, Steve, a couple months back, I met Chief Cebulski at the airport, sat across the aisle from him on the plane. We talked on the plane, and as we walked through MSP Airport, he offered solutions to the issues we discussed that were akin to mine. I was left with the impression that he is stuck aping the position of and being the scapegoat for his leftist DEI-minded soy boy bosses rather than fighting them in the media. I don't know what aping. He is stuck aping the position of. Maybe that means just like mimicking that, or I'm taking from Dan's, and this is Dan's a regular emailer. I know him to be a solid conservative. And he's saying that he thinks he's basically carrying the water for his bosses, and that he himself is not some like liberal wacko. I get that same opinion, Dan. I've not ever sensed that he's a guy who, you know, with all the law enforcement stuff. I mean, I've had him here in studio. I've talked on and off the mic with him. I've not gotten that opinion either. That, you know, he's like, I don't know what would be a liberal. I mean, most law enforcement is conservative, but what would be an example of something in the liberal world that would stretch into law enforcement where a police chief would take the side of liberals over conservatives? I honestly can't think of anything, but I just have never gotten the sense that, like, you know, he hated the North Dakota legislature or hated Trump or hated the conservatives. He never seemed uncomfortable coming in here. Always was very thankful to that we gave him time here. So, like, sometimes you can tell when someone's not on our side, quote unquote, they come in here and they seem really uncomfortable. He was not like that, and always was very complimentary about the way we stood up for law enforcement. So, I don't know if Dan's picking up on something there. I don't know anything about that, but I certainly don't feel like he was an adversary to conservatives in our community. Okay. Best thing I heard all day, Charles Payne is a smart guy, and he's a wise person as well. There's a lot of smart people IQ-wise out there, but they're not all that wise. And so Charles Payne was talking about the energy agenda in our country and what happened here under Joe Biden and what is now happening under Donald Trump.
Let's be really honest about all of this. Democrats, Biden, and Obama told us that higher gas prices were necessary to fulfill the climate agenda.
Yep. Yeah.
And so that's why we shut down nuclear power plants. That's why electricity prices went through the roof long before AI. And that's why we were paying so much for gasoline. They told us to accept that, to accept higher gases, not prices, not just for a small moment in time like this, but forever. And so we can transition to a green economy. So let's stop being phonies about this. You can release 200 million barrels if you want. Maybe that would give us relief for 20 days. It's kind of a dumb thing. To your point, we had almost 700 million barrels. They cut that in half. And so to really start crying these crocodile tears or whatever Schumer does, it's just nonsensical. You know, in these moments, there should be some moments where we are really serious as Americans. And wartime, I think, is one of those where we shouldn't, like, these games of politics never end. And it's so phony baloney coming from Schumer and that party that deliberately wanted oil prices to be substantially higher than where they are now to force us into a green agenda.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the Wall Street Journal is calling what Chuck Schumer wants a red herring. Quote, another rapid drawdown risks more damage. This from their editorial board. It would also take 2 weeks for oil and storage to enter the U.S. market. The administration aims by that time to restore traffic that has ground to a halt in the Strait of Hormuz. Rising prices are painful, but the U.S. and Israel strikes will prevent Iran from inflicting more havoc and pain down the road. Do they have a point?
They have a major point there. You know, it's trying to govern a country day to day, you know, based on oil prices and things, and rather looking, you know, it's so funny because we always kind of applaud China's long-term vision. They have a long-term game plan. Our game plan is, oh man, gasoline's up this week. We better do something drastic like empty the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. We can't win this game.
Yeah.
You know, we do have to look longer term and strategically what we're trying to achieve right there in Venezuela, in the Middle East, with Greenland. People need to really study the implications of these things longer term for us to remain the preeminent nation in the world. If you want to be that, then let's figure that out.
So good. So good. Couple things I really landed on with what he said there, that the Biden administration said this is necessary. Higher gas prices are necessary so that we can transition to a green economy, which has always been a theory. There's not anything you can point to that say we have empirical data that says that this is going to be better for the country. If we do all this stuff, we spend the, you know, whatever, $50 trillion, we're going to get something of benefit from that, so therefore it's worth it. It is a theory. You cannot prove that anything that they were going to do was going to do anything to really change what temperatures were, carbon dioxide, whatever they told us the problem was. So we've got to put up with this because it's the only way we can get to a green economy, as if that was some guaranteed benefit here. He also talked about what Biden did right before the election. Took 200 million barrels out of the Strategic Petroleum Reserve to try to get gas prices down before the election. So when Chuck Schumer is talking about, oh, gas prices are up, what a joke that we're hearing that. And I also love the comments about, you know, China looks at long term and we look at what's going to win politically here in the next 10 minutes. And that's where I think whether you like Trump or hate him, you have to say that Trump does things that politicians don't normally do and give him immense amount of credit for that, because he's doing things that are right, not things that are always popular or will gain immediate benefit. John Tranel, we're talking about North Dakota Republican politics next. Coming to you live from the Drive with Vision studio. This is a good song to start out a segment, right? I mean, high energy, let's go. Kick off a good chat with my buddy John Trandum from the Drive with Vision studio, drivewithvision.com, Vision Ford Lincoln in Wahpeton. John Trandum has been involved in North Dakota Republican politics for, well, about three decades or so, but for the first time in a long time, he's not chair of anything or leading anything. He's just a guy who's involved in the process and trying to make the world a little better. And John's got so much perspective on what happens with North Dakota politics that I like to have him on every once in a while just to sort of talk through some different things. And he and I traded some text messages yesterday about this, and I just thought, you know what, this is a good conversation for us to have in light of what happened at the recent district convention down, I think it was in Lemoore, where they kind of had an overtake of the meeting, and I can't get the GOP chair to come on the show with me, and we have the state convention coming up. So I said, John, come on and talk a little sense into me here on this whole thing. And he's been kind enough to do that. Joins us on the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line. Good morning, John. How are you?
Good morning, Steve. I'm well. Thank you for the opportunity to be on. And it may be you that's talking sense into me.
We'll
figure that out when we're done.
Hey, like I say, we do life together on this show. We kind of help each other figure stuff out. So sometimes that's the best way to do it. None of us has all the answers, right, John? We just try
to figure it out as we go.
Thankfully, the good Lord does, and he directs our steps. And I know you believe that, too. So,
absolutely.
Okay, so let's start with this. How worried are you about this upcoming convention, considering we got a party chair that won't do interviews about how he's trying to plan and prepare for the convention, where it is going to be very interesting? We've got most of the statewide incumbents who say, I'm not coming to this convention. You have people that are at the district, I forget, it was 26 or 28, where they had the meeting that didn't go well. And you've got kind of this groundswell of people that are mad as heck and not going to take it anymore for one reason or another. So are you concerned about what might happen at the end of the month in, up in Minot?
Well, I don't know that anything dire is going to happen. I'm my biggest concern, Steve, is that nothing is going to happen. Typically, this convention is the launching point for all of our statewide candidates. That's kind of part of the purpose of the convention is to get rally the troops together, hear the rah-rah speeches, drop the balloons, and have a good time together, talk about ideas, and pick the best candidates, and then move on to defeat Democrats. But unfortunately, the Republican Party over the past several cycles has been falling a victim to its own success, to where we're dividing internally, and it's making it very challenging, to say the least. When you don't have a viable Democrat Party in North Dakota, and we don't, I mean, let's be perfectly honest about that, and that's not a slight to Democrats or people of that perspective, but they don't have a viable party in North Dakota. They're not going to win any statewide seats. They'll be lucky if they maintain the legislative seats. Maybe they'll pick up one or two, but it'll still be a Republican supermajority. So the only people the Republicans have to fight with is one another. And that's a bad spot.
Why are we having some division within the party, do you think? What's happening here?
Well, I think there's a lot of things happening. And I think at the top of that all, I think it's ego. And that's always our problem, isn't it, Steve? It's my problem. It's everyone's problem is that we got to get over our own egos.
Yeah, the good book talks about pride once or twice, doesn't it?
Once or twice, yeah. And we need to learn what we learned from Ed Schaefer in 1992 when he started building the party. When the Republican Party was a non-entity, we didn't have the statewide offices. We didn't have control of both of the legislative chambers. And he built the party up to what it is right now by bringing people together, working together toward a common goal, recognizing that if you agree on 8 or 9 out of 10 issues, then you're my friend, and we want to work together as opposed to if you're not 100% compliant with what I think, if you don't associate or affiliate with the tribe that I'm a part of, you're my enemy. That was not the mentality, and it's never the mentality when you're in a building stage, but we're not in a building stage anymore. We're in a stage of complete and total dominance so that we can allow these nuances to divide us as individuals and as members of a party with essentially a common goal.
Yeah, and the common goal, I think everybody still believes in getting to the same place, John. I think some people are just more impatient about how we get there these days.
That may be the case, and I hope that the common goal of anyone and everyone who's involved in this political process is good government. Whether you're liberal or whether you're conservative, I hope that's your ultimate goal is good government. It's not power and not conquest and not dominance, but good government. And if we were all to take that approach, I think we'd have an easier time working together, working across party lines when it's warranted. We've seen good bipartisan solutions in North Dakota before where we have both Republicans and even the few number of Democrats that we have, we've seen them work together before toward good solutions. And no, that's not always going to be the case. But I think if we all have the interests of the citizens at heart and good government is our goal, I think we can get over our pride and our selfishness and work toward that goal.
I think, John, that the climate change issue has been one area where I think there has been a little bit of division within the party in terms of how we react to it. There are a number of people in this state, and I am one of them, who will come out and say climate change is a hoax. And it is, I mean, not that the climate is changing. That we know is true. It always has, always will. But the enterprise, the business of climate change is a hoax. And I think
it's the climate change industry.
Yeah, exactly. But I think some people have been unwilling to say it that way. And that has caused, and by some people, I'll point to Doug Burgum was one who he would never come out and say climate change is a hoax. And I don't know what he personally believed about it, but he was reluctant. He always has been reluctant to come out and say that. Now, maybe in recent years he has, but when he was governor, he wouldn't say that. And I think some people in the state, and I said, like, I'm one of them, I look at all of these things and I say, okay, are we subscribing to a hoax here because we're going to just try to seem more moderate, or are we choosing our words because we want to leave ourselves open to industry? And in industry, we know that carbon dioxide pipelines are a thing. They are legal, and they can bring a monetary benefit to a certain area. And so I think this whole issue of climate change and pipelines and transmission lines and all of this has become one area where people have said, this climate change stuff is BS, and I don't want to have anything to do with it. And as long as anyone's talking about this, then I'm going to be frustrated about that. And I think that that was a part of what happened at the district meeting that we've been talking about. And I think there are a lot of North Dakotans who say that some of the people within the establishment in North Dakota have gotten a little squishy on this issue. How have you seen this particular issue play out?
So I don't know that I've seen it as acutely maybe as you have. It's an issue, and I know that at District 28 there's some issues with the pipeline. I think that has more to do with them in a domain than it does with environmentalism. But I think it all circles back to the beginning of our conversation, Steve. If we're pursuing good government is a good steward of the resources of the community, which are the collective property of the people in the state. And if we're good stewards of those resources, including the environment, then there's no need for environmental alarmism. I served for a few years on the Air Pollution Control Advisory Council in Bismarck as a board member, and we would get these edicts from the EPA. And every time, this is the way the meetings went, they'd say the EPA is going to require you to install such and such particulate matter air scrubbers in all of your smokestacks. And we would have one of our experts or our attorney come, and he'd say, you know what, we've been compliant with this for several years. We voluntarily comply with this because we also care about the quality of our air. So I think a lot of times what the environmentalists are trying to do is solve problems that are already being addressed by the citizens, because we all want clean air, we all want clean water, but they're trying to monetize that. Look back to Al Gore and the carbon offsets. Who was selling the carbon offsets and who was profiting by them? So it's an industry. I think it's a false issue. And I agree with you, Steve, 100%, that yes, the climate changes, but I don't think it changes because we drive a Ford or a Toyota. I think it changes because it's been changing for thousands of years.
Yeah, I agree. So my big question on this whole thing, the convention is coming up now, and it sounds like nobody who's a current incumbent, I guess that's a duplicate statement there, but none of the incumbents are going. So is the convention becoming irrelevant if the people who should be the faces of the party and who are kind of the quote-unquote pretty people of the party are not going to be there? Does the convention become irrelevant?
Well, the conventions happen each cycle. So I think the question is this convention going to be irrelevant? And I think the obvious answer is it's going to be hard for this convention to make an impact. Now, I don't know what the state committee has planned for their upcoming meeting this weekend. It's very possible that they may alter or suspend the rules and make endorsements of incumbent candidates. I don't know. I can only speculate about that because I'm not on the committee anymore, so I'm not having those conversations with people who are making those decisions. But I think it remains to be seen whether or not it's relevant or irrelevant. I don't think that the results that we were going to get anyway in the upcoming elections are going to be different than what they would have been had all of the candidates come to the convention or had none of them come to the convention. And I attribute that not to the weakness of the convention, but to the strength of our party and the strength of our statewide candidates. And just how popular and powerful the Republican brand is in North Dakota. And I think that's what people are grappling with, is the power of the Republican brand.
Listener Dan has got a question. Dan, go ahead. What's your question for John?
Yeah, John, good to hear you this morning. I'm a resident of Fargo here. Been a social studies economics teacher for many years before I retired. And I'm glad to see that there's not anything earth-shaking on the horizon. To me, in good government, that's a sign to regroup and maybe take some new initiatives that are common sense. One of them I've always had in mind is this drive to always increase Social Security and get it for teachers is kind of a dead end in this sense that education is paid for, as we all know, by local property tax. And if there's anything that rankles a lot of people, especially in retirement, is that this property tax is it could be a real wild card in their future and how they manage their governments.
Dan, hang on a second, because we have a break we have to take. John, can you hang on to answer Dan's question on the other side? Okay, just a couple minutes here. We'll be back to finish this conversation, Dan's question for John, when we come back on the Steve Hallstrom Show. And you'll have a chance, too, 271-1100, if you want to get into the conversation, back after this. What I love about Vision Ford Lincoln and Wappan is they make it so easy to get the service work done. They'll come up to your parking lot at work in Fargo from Wappan and change the oil in the parking lot. They did it for me not too long ago. It's just one of the many ways that they just think differently. They're thinking out of the box and saying, how can we make life easier for Steve to have a car, truck, or SUV from Vision Ford Lincoln? I got it. Let's let him keep working all day. We'll just go change the oil in his parking lot after he gets back from lunch. DriveWithVision.com. They make it fun to buy a car. I don't know if they make it fun to have your car serviced, but they sure make it easy. So DriveWithVision.com, check that out. All right, finishing our conversation with John Trandum here, longtime, I don't know, operative, whatever the word is, within the GOP. Dan asked you a question, John, before about the tax issue, and I think, Dan, appreciate it. I think you got your question out. John, what answer would you have for Dan?
Well, and Dan talked about Social Security, and I think Social Security is a disaster. FDR, the darling of the left, nearly 100 years ago, called for private accounts for Social Security, and Congress wouldn't give them to him. George W. Bush tried to privatize like 4% of Social Security, and people lost their collective minds over it.
Yeah,
that's a system. And this is at a federal level, so this doesn't affect our state Republican Party or our convention, but that's a much bigger issue that we need our Congress people to address. And I hope at some point, Steve, and I'm like you when I think about investment and planning for your future, I hope we can educate kids out of Social Security so that it becomes, hey, look at this little extra bonus I may or may not get, but I've planned for my retirement and I don't need that. And we could use it for what it was intended for, people who legitimately can't care for themselves. We could reduce the budget by probably 80% if we were to just do that.
Yeah, 100%. Well done. Dan, did that answer your question?
Yeah, additional question now for the expert here. He sounds like a seasoned veteran, and he's seen government inside and out in North Dakota. I'm just wondering what he thinks about this overall idea, which I think is kind of silly scientifically, of sequestration of carbon stuff in the ground, burying it in caves and trying to find, farmers know our plants need carbon dioxide, absolutely vital for crops and strong harvest.
Yeah.
And then to say we're going to take and try and reduce the amount of carbon dioxide that I believe God put in our atmosphere for a reason.
Yeah, get it. Dan, I'm going to let you go just in the interest of time. I think we got it. Dan, thanks for calling. We appreciate your brother. John, what do you say there?
Yeah, my expertise is very limited, but I understand what Dan is getting at there. I think that a lot of times we create industry for the sake of industry and disguise it as a necessity or as a need. And I'm speculating because I don't know everything that I don't know, but it seems like it may be another one of those situations.
Yeah.
But I'm not well versed in that.
Well, I'm not either, John. The only thing I would say is if we can make money on doing it and someone is foolish enough to pay for it, why not, right? If it doesn't hurt you. And obviously,
as long as it's not the government that's making the money.
Well, there's that too, yeah. And if a government, though, if we can make money as a state, though, and that goes so that you and I don't have to pay as much, I guess I'm fine with that happening there. I just think this whole thing is, you know, when you're trying to decide as a government, you say, okay, can this hurt us? Well, obviously, if you and I think carbon dioxide, which I do, is a good thing, and we've had periods of time in our Earth's history where we've had way more parts per million in the air than we do now, and here we are after all of that, and things are fine. If it's not hurting you and it makes money, why not do it? That's kind of how I feel about that whole thing. So anyway,
sure. Yep.
Yeah, John, thanks for giving a call today, or letting me give you a call and getting you on the show to talk a little bit about this. Look, a lot of this is just friendly food fighting, I think, to me. I just wonder about the role of the party long term here. And maybe it's just that we all have incumbents and they feel like they don't need the party's endorsement at the convention, so they're not going to do it. But at some time, John Hoeven will step down, Julie Fedorchuk will be running for something new, or Kevin Cramer will be doing something different. Then we might, then they might need the convention again. So maybe it's just you need it when you need it. I don't know.
And we barely scratched the surface, Steve, so I hope we can revisit this at some point and walk through the history of the convention and what it has done for our party, because it's done an awful lot. And I think it can do a lot more in the future. I think we're having a hiccup here, but I think we're going to bounce back, and we're going to if such it is, as it is, rebuild the party, rebuild the processes, make them relevant again, and provide value to those candidates. And that's the most important
thing. Yep, I'm with you. Thanks, John. Appreciate you. I know you took some time out of work today, and it's a busy day over there at Trandum Automotive, so thanks for doing what you did.
My pleasure. I appreciate the
opportunity,
Steve.
Yep, you got it. Take care. John joining us on the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line. Probably not time to sneak in any more phone calls today, but thanks to those of you who have here today. All right. What's going on the rest of the world? Well, Minnesota Vikings in day one of free agency didn't make any big moves, but I'm seeing some speculation that they could be signing Kyler Murray as their backup quarterback, but someone that could challenge J.J. McCarthy. I'm still on J.J., you guys. I am still a believer. I just don't think we've seen enough. But if you think that you should just like throw him to the scrap heap after maybe not even a full year of playing quarterback, look, his bar is really high. When he's doing it and doing it well, he can do things that most people can't. He's way too young. Didn't throw a ton in college. Wasn't asked to. He might not be the guy, but boy, if they are giving up on him, I don't know. They must see something that we don't see. And Kyler Murray coming in, I'm not all that impressed by him. He's never been a winner. So we'll see what happens there. All right, my friend, have a great day. Keep on flying that flag.